Welcome to the AQA A-Level PE Study Podcast. I'm your tutor for today, and in this episode, we're diving into one of the most fascinating areas of the psychology of sport, personality and attitudes. This is topic 5.1 on your AQA specification, and it's a topic that carries real weight in the exam. Whether you're aiming for those top band marks on an 8-marker or a 15-marker essay, getting this topic nailed is absolutely essential. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get into it. Let's start with the big picture. Why does personality matter in sport? Well, think about it. Two athletes can have identical physical fitness levels, identical training regimes, and yet one consistently performs under pressure and the other falls apart. One seeks out the most demanding competitions while the other avoids them. The difference often comes down to psychology, and specifically to personality and attitudes. Psychologists and sports scientists have been trying to understand this for decades, and the AQA specification asks you to engage critically with the main theories they've developed. Now, before we go any further, I want to draw a really important distinction that trips up so many candidates in the exam. Personality and attitude are not the same thing. Personality refers to stable, enduring characteristics that define how an individual typically thinks, feels, and behaves. Attitude, on the other hand, is directed towards a specific attitude object, like a particular sport, a training method, or a coach. And crucially, attitudes can be changed. They're more unstable than personality traits. Keep that distinction sharp in your mind. Right, let's get into the core concepts. We'll start with trait theory. Trait theory, most associated with Hanns Eysenck, proposes that personality is innate, you're born with it, and that it remains relatively stable across different situations. Eysenck identified two key dimensions of personality. The first is the introversion-extroversion dimension. Introverts are typically quiet, reserved, and prefer lower levels of stimulation. Extroverts are sociable, outgoing, and seek higher levels of stimulation. The second dimension is stability versus neuroticism. Stable individuals are emotionally consistent and resilient. Neurotic individuals are more anxious, moody, and emotionally volatile. Now here's where it gets really interesting for sport. Eysenck's model produces four personality types when you combine these dimensions: the stable extrovert, the neurotic extrovert, the stable introvert, and the neurotic introvert. In a sporting context, extroverts are often associated with team sports and activities involving gross motor skills. Think rugby, football, basketball, because they need higher arousal levels to perform optimally. Introverts, by contrast, tend to excel in activities requiring fine motor skills and precision, archery, snooker, gymnastics, because they're already operating at a higher baseline arousal level. But here's the critical point, and this is where many candidates lose marks. You must not simply state that extroverts are better at sport. That's far too simplistic, and the examiner will not award high marks for it. You need to qualify the statement. Extroverts may perform better in high arousal, team-based, gross motor skill sports. Introverts may perform better in low arousal, individual, fine motor skill sports. The relationship between personality type and sporting success depends entirely on the demands of the specific activity. Now, what are the limitations of trait theory? This is your AO3 evaluation territory. First, there's the issue of ecological validity. Personality is typically measured using questionnaires like Eysenck's Personality Inventory, completed in artificial controlled conditions. These may not accurately reflect how a person actually behaves in the dynamic, pressurized environment of competitive sport. Second, the theory is deterministic. It implies that your personality is fixed and cannot change. This doesn't account for the fact that athletes clearly do adapt their behavior depending on the situation. A normally introverted athlete might become more assertive and vocal when captaining their team. This brings us neatly to our second theory. Social learning theory, developed by Albert Bandura, takes a completely different view. Rather than personality being innate, Bandura argued that behavior is learned through observation and imitation of role models. This process is called modeling. For behavior to be successfully modeled, Bandura identified four key conditions. First, attention. The learner must pay attention to the model. Second, retention. The observed behavior must be stored in memory. Third, motor reproduction. The learner must have the physical capability to reproduce the behavior. And fourth, motivation. There must be a reason to imitate the behavior, often linked to seeing the model being reinforced or rewarded. In a sporting context, think about a young footballer watching a professional player perform a skill and then attempting to replicate it. Or consider how aggressive behavior can be learned. If a player sees a teammate receive praise for a crunching tackle, they may be motivated to reproduce that behavior. This has huge implications for coaches and PE teachers who act as significant role models. The strength of social learning theory is that it accounts for the flexibility of behavior across situations, something trait theory struggles to explain. However, its limitation is that it largely ignores the role of innate personality traits. Surely some people are more naturally predisposed to certain behaviors than others? This is exactly why the interactionist approach proposed by Kurt Lewin is considered the most comprehensive and widely accepted explanation. Lewin's famous formula is B equals F of P multiplied by E. In other words, behavior is a function of personality multiplied by environment. This means that neither personality alone nor the environment alone determines how someone behaves. It's the interaction between the two that produces behavior. So, for example, a naturally introverted athlete, their personality, might behave in a highly assertive, vocal manner when playing in front of their home crowd in a cup final, the environment. Their behavior in that moment cannot be explained by personality alone, nor by the environment alone. It's the interaction. This is why the same athlete might behave very differently in training compared to a high-stakes competition. When you write about the interactionist approach in the exam, always explicitly state the formula B equals F of P multiplied by E, and always provide a specific sporting example. Examiners are looking for that application. Now let's move on to attitudes. An attitude is a learned predisposition to respond in a consistently favorable or unfavorable manner towards an attitude object. The attitude object could be sport in general, a specific sport, exercise, a coach, or a training method. The most important model for understanding attitudes is the triadic model, sometimes called the CAB model, and that acronym is your best friend in the exam. CAB stands for cognitive, affective, and behavioral. The cognitive component refers to the beliefs and thoughts a person holds about the attitude object. For example, I believe that regular exercise is good for my health. The affective component refers to the emotions and feelings associated with the attitude object. For example, I enjoy playing netball. It makes me feel happy and energized. The behavioral component refers to the actions and intentions that result from the attitude. For example, I attend netball training 3 times a week. For a positive attitude towards sport to exist, all three components must be consistent with each other. If there's an inconsistency, say someone believes exercise is good for them but hates doing it and never participates, that's where attitude change becomes relevant. So how do we change negative attitudes towards sport and exercise? There are two main mechanisms you need to know. The first is cognitive dissonance, developed by Leon Festinger. Cognitive dissonance occurs when there is an inconsistency or conflict between two or more of the triadic components. This creates psychological discomfort, a kind of mental tension, which motivates the individual to restore consistency. A coach or PE teacher can deliberately create this dissonance to change a negative attitude. For example, if a student believes exercise is boring, that's the cognitive component, but then has a genuinely fun, enjoyable experience in a new sport, that's the affective component. The dissonance between their belief and their emotional experience may prompt them to revise their belief. They might start to think, maybe exercise isn't so bad after all. Over time, this can shift the behavioral component too. They start participating more regularly. The second mechanism is persuasive communication. This involves using targeted messages to change attitudes. For persuasive communication to be effective, research suggests that several factors matter. The credibility and status of the messenger is crucial. A message delivered by a respected Olympic athlete is far more persuasive than the same message delivered by an unknown source. The quality and clarity of the message itself matters, and the characteristics of the audience, their existing attitudes, their level of involvement also influence how receptive they are to the message. A common mistake in the exam is to describe persuasive communication in vague, generic terms. Examiners want to see you reference the specific factors, the status of the messenger, the quality of the message, and the characteristics of the audience. Always be specific. Right, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. This is where we really sharpen your exam technique. Mistake number one, confusing the interactionist approach with social learning theory. They are not the same. Social learning theory says behavior is learned through observation. The interactionist approach says behavior results from the interaction between personality traits and the environment. The key difference is that the interactionist approach still acknowledges the role of innate personality traits. Social learning theory largely dismisses them. Mistake number two, saying extroverts are better at sport without qualification. Always link personality type to arousal levels and the specific demands of the sport. Extroverts need more stimulation to reach their optimal arousal level, making them better suited to high arousal, team-based, gross motor skill activities. Introverts are already highly aroused, making them better suited to precision-based, fine motor skill activities. Mistake number three, describing persuasive communication without mentioning the status of the messenger or the quality of the message. These are the specific factors examiners are looking for. Mistake number four, not providing a specific sporting example when the command word is apply or explain using an example. If the question says apply or explain, you must include a named athlete, a specific sport, or a concrete scenario. Vague answers will not access the higher mark bands. For essay questions, whether 8 or 15 marks, remember the AO1, AO2, AO3 balance. AO1 is knowledge and understanding. Describe the theory accurately. AO2 is application. Apply it to a specific sport or athlete. AO3 is analysis and evaluation. Critique the theory, discuss its limitations, compare it to alternative explanations. The mark scheme rewards all three in roughly equal measure, so don't neglect evaluation. Now, a quick-fire recall quiz. Cover up your notes and see how many of these you can answer. Question 1. What does the acronym CAB stand for in the context of attitudes? Pause and think. The answer is cognitive, affective, behavioral. Question 2. Write out Lewin's formula for the interactionist approach. Pause. The answer is B equals F of P multiplied by E. Behavior is a function of personality multiplied by environment. Question 3. Name the four conditions required for modeling to occur in Bandura's social learning theory. Pause. The answer is attention, retention, motor reproduction, and motivation. Question 4. What is cognitive dissonance and who developed it? Pause. Cognitive dissonance is the psychological discomfort caused by inconsistency between the components of the triadic model. It was developed by Leon Festinger. Question 5. Give one limitation of trait theory in explaining sporting behavior. Pause. One limitation is the lack of ecological validity. Personality questionnaires are completed in artificial conditions and may not reflect real sporting behavior. Another is that trait theory is deterministic and cannot account for the variability of behavior across different sporting situations. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and review the relevant section before your next revision session. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of everything we've covered today. Personality is stable and enduring. Attitude is directed towards an attitude object and can be changed. Trait theory, associated with iSync, proposes innate, stable personality traits on two dimensions, introversion, extroversion, and stability neuroticism. Social learning theory, associated with Bandura, proposes that behavior is learned through observation and modeling. The interactionist approach, associated with Lewin, combines both B equals F of P multiplied by E. The triadic model of attitudes has three components. Remember, CAB, cognitive, affective, behavioral. Attitudes can be changed through cognitive dissonance, creating conflict between the components, or through persuasive communication, using credible messengers and quality messages. And always, always provide specific sporting examples in your answers. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing past papers, and remember, the difference between a good answer and a top band answer is always the quality of your evaluation and the specificity of your examples. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.